Maurice was considering an evening walk. It was hard not to run down the street clicking his heels together. He didn't have to use his stick, didn't get tired, didn't have to avoid the cold which troubled his joints so much, or slippery conditions where he would end up breaking his neck. But oh, how he felt guilty. He knew what he was now, of course he did. But he was determined not to let it control him. He would control it. If Liz could do it, so could he. He knew she was infected, but didn't know if she knew how, or why, or if he was. But he knew she was carrying on with her life, and so would he. Of course, it would be more difficult when she was finally turned. It was Saturday evening, and Maurice knew that this meant a gathering of the clan, so to speak, in the local pub. It was a lovely pub, unchanged by time, real fires, real ale, of course, and tasty pub grub. They always sat in the same alcove, too. They would take turns in going down early and saving the seats. But even if they didn't, most people knew that it was their place for the Saturday evening and left well alone. If a visitor came, well, they talked so loud and laughed so heartily amongst themselves that they soon felt uncomfortable and found another seat. Maurice wanted to go, but he couldn't trust himself around them yet. What if he had an uncontrollable urge and bit one of them? He had to know his new self better first. The other matter was, he didn't know what he would be able to drink. What if he vomited blood all over them after having a pint of mild? He also felt like a spy. In fact, he decided he was a spy after turning on them by giving them all that wine. Maurice knew what was in that wine, of course, but he was compelled to do what the master told him to. This was not too bad, he supposed. He could have been ordered to bite or kill one of them. At least this didn't make him a criminal. And he decided he had spent his entire life on the right side of the law. Why change things now? He also missed his best friend, Freddy. He really hoped he hadn't drunk any of that wine. But knowing Freddy, he hadn't. Now, if it had been ale, well, he would bet all his savings that Freddy would be infected now. He decided he would go for that walk and thought about what he should wear. He didn't feel the cold anymore, so didn't need the warm coat, scarf, or cap. In fact, he could go out in his underpants, and he wouldn't have one goosebump. Appearance mattered very much at the moment, though, so he gathered together all of his various bits and bobs. He picked up a couple of spare carrier bags and stuffed them into his pocket, deciding to visit the supermarket for some more liver, which would save him a journey. He opened the door, and it was a beautiful clear night. Lovely. Out he stepped, closed the door, and walked smartly down the path. As he reached his front gate, it suddenly struck him. Blast it! My stick! That wouldn't do at all. So he turned back towards the house, went in, and picked it up. As he closed his front door again, the next door neighbour was just coming in with a takeaway pizza box and a six-pack of beer. Are you fixing her up? He asked Maurice. What? What do you mean? Your house? No, why do you say that? The newspaper at the windows. It must be really dark in there. What's that in aid of? Oh yes, I am decorating. You were right the first time. I was miles away, Eddie. Ah, right, thought so. Do you want a slice of pizza? You are welcome to one. I will be eating the leftovers for breakfast anyway. Maurice could smell each and every topping on the pizza. Extra garlic, no thanks. I'll pass. Going out on a hot date? Are you? And don't want to knock her out before you have had a good night kiss? Something like that. See you later, Eddie. Bye, Eddie said, and went happily through his door to enjoy his tea. Another time, I would have really enjoyed that pizza, Maurice thought. He shook his head and set off towards the village. Bob was on the phone with his friend Adam. They had been discussing the merits of which gun to use in a zombie game, and they both had different but valid opinions on the benefits of each. What are you doing tonight? Bob asked. Just Xbox. My mum is meeting her new friend, so I have the house to myself. I have got a massive bag of popcorn and a big bottle of Coke, so I'm set. Are you off to the pub, you alcoholic? Adam laughed. Yeah, just going for a few hours as usual. I will be on the coat too, though. I will be back by 9 if you want a game. I will still be online at 12, mate. She will be out for ages, so I will see you later. Prepare to be well and truly thrashed, Bob taunted. You and whose army? Adam replied. The boys both laughed, and Bob put down the receiver. He made out to Adam that it was a bit of a chore going down to the pub and sitting with all the oldies and drinking Coke, but he loved it. Bob took his best jeans out of the drawer and pulled on a t-shirt. He hoped it wouldn't be just them tonight down the pub. That would be boring. The way things were, though, everyone was getting ill these days. Freddie was off to the pub. Actually, the whole weekend would be very dull without it. It was the highlight of the week for him. He quite readily would volunteer to go down first and save the seats. Plus, on Saturdays, his wife liked to watch reality TV shows about dancing, and he couldn't abide them. He enjoyed being band librarian. He had never played an instrument or wished to. He was best utilised on the periphery, and let's face it, some people had to be the workers, while others were the queen bees. His wife had no interest in it, so band was like his garden shed. Plus, she was always doing things with her three sisters, so everyone was happy. When he was about 2 minutes from the pub, he saw a familiar figure coming in towards from the opposite direction. Short, stocky, with a cap and stick, he knew that person anywhere. His old friend, Maurice. Maurice saw him and waggled his stick at him in greeting. How do? You're going in the wrong direction, Mo. I'm crying off tonight, Freddie. I'm not right yet. Just off to the shop to get some essentials, you know. You need some lubrication down your neck. That's what you need. Oh, I couldn't face it, really. You must be ill, then. I hope you've had some medicine. I'll get something from the shop. I will be as right as rain soon, Freddie. Don't worry. I will until you are sorted, Mo. Ring me if you want anything. Freddie set off and was soon at the pub. He opened the door to the foyer, walked in, and let the swing door shut behind him. The dark was outside, and in here it was like a gentle caress of delicious food smells, beer and salt and vinegar crisps. It was always warm, sometimes overly, as the fires were quite large, and it also had the benefit of central heating. He took off his overcoat and laid it on the chair at one table, hat on another chair and cardigan on another. Freddie went to over the bar and spoke to the barmaid who he had known for 30 years. Hal, even his children had gone to school with her. She knew his tipple, so it was already halfway poured when he got there. They spoke about the weather for a moment. Then she gave him his pint. He picked up a menu from a pile off the bar and sat down. He always ate the same meal here, but liked to think that he wasn't stuck in his ways, so still had a look. He sat down at another table, so, in fact, he had occupied several tables. He wasn't worried, as there was only a young couple in the bar who were situated in another alcove, so he was in no danger of feeling he should move or make room. He looked at the menu while having a drink of his beer and thought, what shall I have? Curry? No. Scampi and chips? No, I know. What about steak and ale pie with puff pastry and chips? Yes, that's it. He slowly got up after having another sip of his drink and walked over to the bar. The barmaid said, steak and ale pie, Freddie? Yes, he said, steak and ale pie for a change. He winked at her. Okay, I will bring it over when it is ready. Thank you very much, he replied, and returned to his seat, knowing his pie would only be 15 minutes at the most, and by that time some of the others would be in. Some ate meals there, and some didn't. But no one cared really what the others consumed, as they were just there for the conversation and company. He had just settled himself when he saw two friendly faces smiling through the little windows into the pub. They noisily came into the small vestibule. There was a waft of cold, crisp air, and they began hanging up their coats. Irene was a very slim, small Scottish lady, who was dreamy, spiritual, and referred to herself as Wee Renee, so that is what everyone else called her too. She always wore strange clothes that didn't match and had an otherworldly aura about her. Her friend Pat was the opposite, large, loud, and a woman of enormous appetites. She drank stout, and tales were told of all the husbands she had had before moving to Freemere, but no one dared to ask her the truth. Opposites attract, however, and Pat and Wee Renee were the very best of friends. They played in different sections of the band, Wee Renee on cornet and Pat on the horn, but they always stood together when it came to opinions on music and everything else, whether that was politics, tattoos, or which washing powder was the best. They went to the bar and ordered their drink and meal. Wee Renee went for a small sweet sherry and a cheese salad sandwich. Pat went for half a pint of stout, large fish and chips, bread and butter with chocolate fudge cake and fresh cream for pudding. "I'll get the cutlery," she said. Wee Renee picked up both drinks and came straight over to sit down with Freddy. She had a shopping bag with her, which contained all manner of secrets, and everyone knew she liked a seat at the back so she could get her flask of herbal tea out and drink it later. Pat followed a minute later, three sets of cutlery in one hand, salt and vinegar in the other hand, tomato ketchup under one armpit, and brown sauce under the other. She dropped herself down on one of the soft chairs and unloaded her burdens. "I brought you one, Freddy. You know you always forget until it arrives," she nudged him. "Thoughtful as ever, Pat," he said. "And brown. I know you like brown on your pie." "I might not be having pie. I'm a man of mystery. No one knows my next move." "I bet my best knickers you are having pie. I've never seen you eat anything else." "All right, I am having pie," Freddy laughed. "You can keep your knickers on." "They are wee pink ones. I've seen them on the washing line," Wee Renee joked. "Nothing of mine is wee, Renee," Pat replied. Freddy took a drink of his beer at that point and kept quiet, which was best. He thought that was enough talk about Pat's knickers. Freddy liked them both very much, and they were very good company on their own, but especially together. They really bounced off each other, and many times it was like watching a cabaret show. Outside, Morris looked through the window. He watched Freddy, Pat and Wee Renee laughing and ached to be inside and part of it all. It made him feel immensely sad for his old life and wished for his old knees back and all his frailties. He hadn't realised how much he enjoyed his life until it was gone. Walking to the shop, he had had an idea. He had bought 4 packets of liver, which he thought at this time of night didn't look too suspicious, and he had also bought 1 bottle of Guinness. Maybe if he tried it at home and it gave him no severe after effects, then perhaps cravings withstanding, and if he hadn't attacked the postman next week, he could come to the pub and join in with everyone else. Maybe just live in the hope that no one ordered garlic mushrooms. Just then the landlord came round and shut all the curtains, not noticing Maurice, as he was laughing at something Pat had said, and his eyes were on her. Maurice drew back. He felt shut off from the band, in more ways than one now. He sadly went off into the night to his dark house, with the newspaper on the windows and the solitary prospect of his liver and Guinness supper. One by one they came into the pub, the biggest group being Bob, with his parents, Tony and Sue. Soon the alcove was full, and tables were loaded with glasses, plates and crisp packets. Bob had wanted the foot-long dog, which he had foolishly put too much ketchup on, and had splattered everywhere. Wee Renee was trying to get it out of Gary's Fair Isle sweater with some baby wipes. "I'm so sorry, Gary," Sue embarrassingly said. "He won't be told, you know." "It's not a problem. I have got everything on this. That's why I always wear patterned ones. They last longer until the wash. I have egg and everything on this, you know. I think it is wise for me to take it home and give it a wee wash in fairy suds," said Wee Renee, giving up on the baby wipes and putting them back in her bag. "No, Wee Renee, it's good enough, that is," he replied, without even checking the stain. Bob was on his phone, texting his friend, ignoring all the fuss that he had caused. He had tried this tactic many times to avoid trouble, and it mostly worked. I saw Maurice earlier, on the way here. He is getting himself some medicine, so should be on the mend soon, Ernie.
Good news. I said to Lynn that he looked very peaky last week. You're here, though, Liz. Always the trooper.
Yeah, I couldn't face being in on my own, and Andy was coming anyway. I thought it would be good for a distraction.
Janet rang Liz yesterday. She is anxious about Woody. He hasn't been to work, still ill from last week.
She is really fretting, bless her, because she had to go on a weekend residential course with work this weekend, and you know how funny they are if you don't go. She wanted to look after Woody, even though she says he is in a mood with her. He promised her he would come out tonight and meet us. I am wondering if he's too ill or too miserable to come, Liz said.
I'll give him a ring, Ernie assured her.
It's like a wee plague, wee Renee whispered.
Yeah, a zombie plague, said Bob, with an interested look on his face.
Or vampires.
They all laughed.
You with your horror club. You and Adam want to watch some spy films or adventure films or something. You pair are horror mad.
Rest assured, lad, if they rock up to our front door, I still have my gun, Tony said loudly.
Said Sue, poking him in the leg.
You won't have it long if you keep shouting about it.
What's this, Tony? Pat said, excited. I never knew you were pistol packing.
It was his granddad's, Pat. It probably doesn't even work. It was from the war.
It does work. I've taken it up on the moors and shot some tin cans up there.
Oh, have you now? When was I going to hear about this? Sue asked.
Tony didn't reply and looked up to the ceiling for inspiration.
Guns are useless on things like that, Dad. You need to join horror club with me and Adam.
He's right, you know, guns don't work. I myself have witnessed all sorts of weird and strange things roam these moors, on this plane and from beyond the veil, believe me.
We, Renee, said in a quivering voice, looking at them all with large eyes in distress.
Pat surveyed the others, waiting for someone to dispute this. Then when they didn't, she sniffed and finished her drink.
Has anyone here considered it could be aliens? Or pod people, whispered Gary.
Bob stuck two thumbs at Gary.
Brilliant. Anyone for another? Tony asked.
Woody lay on top of his bed, considering what Janet has asked him to do. He didn't feel like going to the pub and making conversation with people. He was generally an amiable bloke. Always had been. Not this last week. He had told her just what she wanted to hear, so she would go and not worry about him. She had rung today. He didn't want to answer the phone, speak to her or anyone else. But he knew if he didn't, she would be straight in the car, back down to him, to see what was wrong. As he preferred to be on his own, he had chosen this option and put on his best "I am okay" voice to quickly get free of the situation. He never had any intention of going to the pub. She had left him all his meals for the 2 days she was away. Food on separate plates, covered with foil, in the fridge. Each dish had a sticky note, with the instructions on how to heat it, stuck to the top. He hadn't eaten since she had gone, and was used to eating quite a lot. So what he did now was rub his stomach, and just think about how ill he was, and how he just wanted it to go away. The thought had crossed his mind that he might be getting depressed, as he had never felt like this before. Trying to cheer himself up, he got off the bed, slowly went down the stairs one at a time, holding tight to the banister, and sat down in his chair, exhausted. He put on the football that he had recorded earlier. He thought he might drop off this morning, so had set the recorder. In fact, he had been asleep all day. He had no energy, and knew that he usually ate large meals, snacks, and fatty foods, so he could transport his body to work and band and to do the garden. No wonder he felt so weak, as no food was inside him. He decided to make an effort. Now he had got as far as getting downstairs and wandered into the kitchen. He even struggled to open the fridge, and when he did, he had to lean with his other hand on the work surface to support him. He peeked under all the circles of foil and decided to eat a couple of sausage out of the one that contained sausage and mash. As usual, Janet gave generous portions, and there were 6 fat cooked sausages in there. So he ate 3, standing there by the fridge. They tasted good, and already Woody felt a little better. He stood for what he thought was a minute, but was actually 10 minutes daydreaming, looking into the fridge, but not seeing it. He reached under the foil again and ate the other 3, took the plate out and put it on the table, removing the foil. He stared at the plate. The mashed potatoes, peas, onion gravy. No, he couldn't manage that. But then something that his mother used to say crossed his mind. What was it? What the eye doesn't see, the heart doesn't grieve over. He laid the foil flat on the table and scraped the rest of the meal on top of it, folding the foil over the top to make a parcel, which went straight into the bin. She would only tell him off if she found the mash in the waste food container. He was just thinking what else he could try to eat out the foil containers when there was a knock at the door.
The master stood looking through a chink in the curtains at the people in the pub with one red eye. He could hear everything they were saying and could smell their delicious blood urn above the food and alcohol. Michael was with him and was trying to look over his shoulder. I have plans for them all, you know, but in particular, I would like that boy and his family. I've never collected a whole family. You would think I have, but something has always happened, and I would only end up with only one, sometimes 2. Isn't it strange, after all this time, that I haven't done it? I have a special interest in them, but I get the feeling this is my time, and I will get many in this village. Just something on my tick list, Michael. It's good to have goals, remarked Michael. Didn't any of them have your wine?
No, alas, only 2 had wine the other night, a lot less than I anticipated.
It doesn't shock me. A lot are tea drinkers in this band, and if truth were told, I only have wine if someone else is buying. I can be found brewing up more often than not.
What are you going to do then? Just wait for them when they go home. Get them all at once.
No, it is not what I am about to do it at all. Quick is to be discovered, and that is not what I want to do, is it? I am playing the long game. No quick gains. I've made that mistake before. This time I can have it all, and that is what I want, so can wait my own sweet time.
Can I ask what you're planning to do with Christine? How does she fit into your plans?
I don't like her very much. She thinks she is better than me, and she isn't.
The master detected a hint of jealousy from Michael. He knew that many people became obsessed with him and wanted to be in his best favour, to be his special one above anyone else. Wasn't that human nature? And Michael was still human. He had to reassure him.
That is not certain now. But she is a good pawn, is she not? She has connections. She is useful to our cause.
That isn't what you are doing with me, is it? Using me as a pawn?
Of course not, the master replied. But we all have our roles in this war, even me. I have plans for many of you. For instance, tonight's visit we made. He will make an excellent servant of mine and spreader of the word, so to speak. I think he will be able to be undiscovered for a while. He has control.
Ah, Woody, yes. Nice bloke is Woody.
You see, prior sanity is the biggest part in how they will become. If they have the predisposition to become violent, this will become great once I've made them my own. Some will hide it, some will become terrifying. Michael gulped. He could see an aspect of this in Stephen, who before, let's face it, was pretty average.
What you don't know is that I've done this many times before. Quite recently, in fact, so I know what I'm doing. No need to be concerned. I think you need to go and check on Stephen. He is still in need of guidance and support.
Can't you do it? I don't know what I'm doing. Why do I have to have the uncontrollable sibling?
You aren't the only one. Maybe I have one too, but that is for another night. Needless to say, I have better things to do and more visits to make tonight. I have to visit my friends over the hill. Kate is there at this very moment, visiting her family and chewing the fat, so to speak. Earlier, she informed me that other matters require my personal attention there. I will need to do that and back before morning. Tomorrow,
I will try to tie up some loose ends and get to the last few people that I marked on your bonfire night. Let each of us attend to our own business.